honored to be able to stand in a room with most of these men. I'm going to assume, find out in just a minute, how many are serving as elders. I appreciate this congregation here for her leadership. As he said, 4 out of 5 of the men are here. They've been my friends since Wayne moved here, and since we moved to Houma, they have been there with us all every step of the way. And even David and came down last summer at Vacation Bible School with Dwight, with a group of young people, and helped us with door knocking and helped fix some physical things that needed being fixed. And they got to observe the work and meet the brethren that we have down there. And I invite them at any time to come to where we work, because we're working for the Lord and we're not ashamed of what we do. And they were impressed with what they saw, and we and our brethren were very impressed with them. And so our brethren know about university, and university knows about our brethren. So we're grateful. Thank you, Cliff. It was a great trip to Jamaica. Wasn't able to go this year, but Lord willing, maybe they'll ask me to go back next year. It is an honor to have my beautiful wife of 44 years sitting back in the corner. If I'm anything, number one, it's because of God. Number two, it's because of Kathy. And so I'm grateful for her being here. How many of you gentlemen in here serve in the role of as an elder where you are? That's about 3/4 of the group, maybe a little better. Thank you. Well, I appreciate your being here, and I do appreciate your work in the church and for the Lord. I serve as an elder at Houma as well. I've been there we've been there almost 8 years, and the last 2.5 years or so, I have served with 2 other gentlemen. I'd be amiss if I didn't mention my brother sitting on the back row back there, David Myers, who lives over here at Luling, but works at Luling. But David has been a great friend to me and my family ever since they've been out here. And he's helped us with some things, and we tried to help him with some. And so grateful for David stand for truth. We moved there, and there were 4 elders. And one of those men moved, thankfully, about 1.5 years after we moved there. He moved out here to Houston. And so you can keep him out here. You can keep him in Houston. And I mean, I'm not all Cajun, but I'm getting close. So, and then there was, we had an elder whose wife passed away. And so those 2 men, for the majority of the time that the other 2 men who are now serving had served, had been the more demonstrative 2, or the more determined, more self-willed 2 elders in that group. So the 2 men I serve with now had really been on the sidelines for a long time serving as elders. They were just, I mean, they knew what they knew. They're good men, they're godly men, they know the truth, they defend the truth. But they never had really been in the workings of the eldership as much, because these other 2 men pretty much ran the eldership. And then when these 2 other ones were moved out of the way, then here these 2 guys come up, and they didn't really have a lot of idea what they were supposed to be doing at first. And so after a period of time, they asked me, would I serve and put my name before the congregation? And so for the past 2.5 years, we've been working together. They're great men. They've made me some promises 8 years ago when I moved there. They've never broken a promise. They have defended me behind my back to brethren who didn't like my style of straightforward preaching, didn't like being so dogmatic with things. Said, David gets up and just says it just like there can't be any other way. And they ask these brethren, what does he preach this wrong? And they said, well, he's not going to preach anything wrong. He knows the scriptures. And they said, we just don't like the way he preaches. Oh, well, there's another congregation on down the road down here if you don't like the way he preaches, because we like the way he preaches. And I say that to say this, that I've been able to work with them, and I feel it's a family feel. And so I had a good relationship with them as a preacher for 6 years, and I've had a great relationship with them now as a preacher and an elder. And so I was asked to speak on 5 things that every preacher wants every elder to understand. So I didn't know whether to come from this from the preacher standpoint as much or from the elder standpoint as much. And since most of the preachers chose not to come in here, I guess we really can talk about them today, because they chose not to come in here. But there are some things that I would like to say to the elders, of which I am one as well. Number one, and these are not in any particular order, and if we have time at the end of our session, I'm going to open it up to you for you to give me some things that I didn't mention that I should have, if we have the time. But number one, preachers want elders to know that the preacher's wives need to be made to feel secure.
Amen.
That is a, you know, in general, women have more an issue with security than men do. In general, there are some women. Obviously, they're not. There are exceptions to all those rules, but most women need to feel protected and provided for. And if they feel that, if they have that security around them, then they're at ease. And if you haven't been close to your preachers, and if you haven't, and of course, Butch's in a situation where his preacher doesn't have a wife, so he doesn't have to worry about that part right now. But if you haven't been close to your preacher and his wife, you may not realize what it takes to be a preacher's wife and what elders ought to consider about that. For example, when I've been preaching 30 years. I went to school, started 32 years ago. We've been married 44 years, three quarters of our lives together, I've been preaching. The first 12 years of our marriage, I had different odd jobs, and eventually landed a job with her dad. I had my own milk route, and he was the owner of all the routes, and so we were pretty much set to have a job for life. And we had a house. It was in a cove. It is now paid for because my sister bought it from me. You know, just all the you know, what you really want to have. You got a house. You got little kids. You live in a cove. And I decided I wanted to be a preacher. And Kathy had to make some great sacrifices because she finally had her a house that was hers. She could do what she wanted to with it. It was up in a cove, had a fenced-in backyard. We had two little kids, and life was great. I worked for her. I had my own milk route. I would have owned it eventually one day. Never would have had to worry about a job. Everything was, you know, as far as the American dream goes, we were right there. And then I said, I sure wish I could be a preacher. And she said, well, whatever you want to do, that's what we'll do. And so for the last 32 years, we went to school 2 years. The last 30 years, we have basically depended on brethren. Now, when we sold our house, we moved to a place that didn't have a preacher's house, and we sunk all of the equity in that house. And then we lost every penny we had. So when we moved away, we had we had $500 in our pocket. And I was preaching a meeting in Arkansas, and she left. We changed cars with her parents, and we left that money in the car, and somebody stole it, and we didn't even have the $500. So we basically were at the bottom, I mean, just with nothing. But she never worried about it. At least I never saw her worry about it. Too many times, a preacher is held back in what he can do because the pressure that his wife feels, that she's at the mercy of brethren. And if the brethren walk in one day and say to her and to him, we're thinking about making a change here, so we're going to give you 30 days, 60 days, 90-day notice, or if you have it written, whatever, and you know, we bid you, you know, we're going to take care of you, but we bid you Godspeed down the road. There you go. What are you going to do now? It's not, you know, you just go. And sometimes members, and sometimes elders don't really think about that, about what she has to go through. And how demoralizing it is and how discouraging the feeling can be in the preacher's home when she feels like that, if the elders don't make an effort to let her know, you know, I'm not saying that you have to make a promise that you're going to be here till you die or be here 100 years, but there needs to be some communication with the elder and the elders and the preacher's wife and the preacher to let him know and her know, we're going to take care of you. Houma, Louisiana. You don't go there. You don't go through there to go anywhere else. If you know, brother on the back knows, he used to preach in that part of the country years ago. You are going to Houma if you go. It is as far, it's 90 miles southwest of New Orleans. Southwest of New Orleans. So if you look on a map and you see Louisiana and you see the boot, we're right in the heel of that boot. And about 20 miles from all the inlet waters that go out to the Gulf of Mexico. So, they don't have a lot of people who want to come down there and preach. And consequently, they've had a hard time keeping preachers. And most guys who went because they didn't have anywhere else to go until they could find somewhere else to go, and then they were gone. Well, it was my dream in the 90s to move to Russia and do mission work, and Kathy didn't want to go to Russia, and so I couldn't go without her. So she agreed to go to Houma. And I say all this to say this, that those gentlemen said, they asked us about our past, and we talked about it, and they said, we don't do people like that. We want somebody down here who wants to live here, and he wants to preach. If he comes here and he preaches the gospel, and he lives a godly life, he will be here until he dies. He said, we can promise you that, because we're not going to run you off. He said, first of all, we like you, and number two, we can't find anybody else who wants to come. So you really have a decent amount of job security, because nobody else really wants to come down there. But being down there is wonderful. And they have made Kathy, they made an effort to let her know that we're going to take care of you down here. We're not going to mistreat you. And they have not mistreated us yet, not even one bit. And I'm very confident in them. They have done that. But I have been in places where it wasn't that way. I've been in places where, the preacher's wife was, that's what she was. She was the preacher's wife. She wasn't part of the congregation. Even the preacher wasn't part of the congregation. He was the preacher, and she was the preacher's wife. And so they were off to the side over here in a little corner as far as the rest of the congregation felt. And I'm just saying elders, preachers want to know from the elders, and want the elders to understand what his wife has to go through, what she's given up in some ways. Kathy would never complain, but, she doesn't have a house that's her own. She can't put nails in a wall or tear a wall down or do something out there to a house. If we rent a house, that's somebody else's house. And we're pretty, we're not old, but we're not very young either. And so it's not going to be feasible probably to ever have a house at our age. So it's probably going to be that way the rest of life. But preachers, and it's hard for her to get all in working with a congregation unless she feels secure in that congregation. And you want her in there because she is the backbone to that preacher. She is the support, at least, to that preacher. And not only that, Kathy is an extremely talented lady, and she has done a marvelous job with our ladies in teaching them visual aids and working. She and I worked the curriculum up, and we handle that together as far as she gets the teachers. I help get teachers. She gets the teachers. The ladies deal with her. I deal with the men. And we have a great Bible school program now. Didn't have when we moved there, but because of her skills and her feeling secure there and the elders saying, we're going to make this work, that it's worked out well. But so many times it doesn't if the elders don't understand that she needs to feel secure in where she is. All right. I'll leave that there. Number two, elders need to understand from a preacher's standpoint that he needs a shepherd for his soul too. Where you have a congregation like, I can compare it like university, where they have had such great such great organization and such great leadership. But when you go into smaller places and places that don't have exactly what like it is here at university, the preacher's often seen as the rock. He is almost viewed as invincible by a lot of people. They don't even entertain the thought that the preacher could have his feelings hurt. You know, he's the whipping board at the back door for brethren who want to get something off their chest. If they don't like the elders, they're gonna wear the preacher out. They're probably not gonna go to the elders. They're gonna go to the preacher, and they think that he is, you know, and he can take it because he's a preacher. That's what he's supposed to do. You know, that's his job. And what brethren don't, and preachers, I mean, elders don't sometimes take into consideration is those. He has the education most of the time, and he has the experiences that a lot of the elders don't have. And he sometimes knows some things about some situations that maybe the elders haven't occurred, you know, in their life, in their time as an elder. But what they don't understand is those experiences and that life has wounded him at times. He stands sometimes in need of repair. And if you don't have elders that care about that, then that man's going to go hurting. He is not God. He's capable of failing. And also elders are as well. And so if there's gentlemen here who preach, I would tell you that preachers need to understand elders aren't God either. They have feelings. And they're made out of clay, as it were, and they can fail. If both sides remember that, before I started preaching, I was told by a fellow, a preacher, that there will be three classes of people that, when you deal with brethren, they'll view three different classes of people. One of them is men, one of them is women, and the other one is a preacher. He's not a man, he's not a woman, he's a preacher. He doesn't have feelings. Say what you want to him, he has to take it because he's the preacher. He's like the doormat at the door. You can brush your feelings off, and I've had it happen to me. Probably not as much as other guys have, but I've had it happen to me. People were getting stuff off their chest, and you stand there and you take it. One of the first things Kathy had to learn how to deal with was they would go out the door, and they would say, "You're just so lucky to have him as a husband. You know, you are so lucky that he is your husband." And she said, "You ought to. He doesn't live in this church building." So, preachers need to be shepherded in their personal lives. Not just in their preaching, but in their personal lives. Now, there are some preachers who lack the humility to allow that. They think they have the world by the tail on a downhill pool, and you can't tell them anything. And I know some of those fellows personally. But, and then again, some preachers are a little reluctant to go to the elders and say, "I'm having a problem with this," or, "I'm struggling in this area," because some elders will look at that as, well, it might be time we might need to make a change, because, you know, if this fellow's not handling this right here right, then, and so let's say we'll just find somebody who can handle it right, instead of working with that man and helping him through that situation. That's what elders are supposed to do anyway, as you well know, and preachers are men who, and the fellow elders need a little shepherding too sometimes. From each other. I mean, we're all in this together. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, about not being a competition. But again, a preacher needs to know that he has an elder watching out for his soul. And an elder would do a preacher well if he sees something going awry in his life or something he's got a question about. They come talk to the man about it and ask him, "Hey, can we help you in this area?" And the preacher should be humble enough and godly enough to say, "Yes, I can use some help in this area." And that way you help that brother keep his soul saved, maybe, or you help him become a better preacher, whatever it may be. Number three. Elders should understand that their preacher from time to time needs to be publicly endorsed in what he does. As the general rule, the preacher is up front, and he's the one who voices most of the teaching that goes on from the pulpit, especially in smaller congregations. And so if some brethren get upset, then they obviously take that out on the preacher. And don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying a preacher should seek praise for what he does. That's not what I'm talking about. We're all unprofitable servants. And when we've done all that we can do, the Bible says in Luke 17:10, that we're still unprofitable servants. But there comes a time when one or all the elders need to mount the pulpit, especially if the subject has been one that's hit close to home in the congregation, and there's a situation that needs to be handled, the preacher has handled it correctly, then an elder gets up behind him and says, "We just want the congregation to know the eldership stands behind what was just preached." And then to the congregation, there's that cooperative effort between the elders and the preacher coming out. Instead of people going out and talking behind the back saying, "Well, the preacher's just, he's just trying to get somebody told." If the elders are there with him and stand behind him, and then that shoe goes on the other foot, preachers, that from time to time, the preachers need to endorse their elders. Preachers need to say, I'm grateful to be able to preach under an eldership that stands for truth. I'm grateful I preach under an eldership that cares for souls. I preach under an eldership that cares for me, that cares for my family. That's a two-way street, but we're talking about preachers here, so what they want elders to understand is that from time to time, they need that backing from the elders to say, we approve of this message, or not approve, but this is something we ask the preacher, if they ask the preacher to preach on it. I was once asked in a congregation before I preached in Louisiana to preach on a certain situation because there was a man who was causing a lot of trouble. And they wanted me to get pretty detailed about it. And I said, "I will do that under one condition. If one of you will get up behind me and say, we asked David to preach that subject." I said, "I'm not asking you to get up and say I did a good job. I'm not asking you to get up and say, you know, that David's the best preacher we ever heard. I'm saying I want you to say we asked David to preach on that subject," because I had already preached on it time or two before without any confirmation from the elders. And this time they particularly asked me to get very specific with it. And they said, "Well, just tell them we said that." I said, "No, sir, it doesn't work that way." I said, "Not in this case. It doesn't work that way, because the brethren will take that as I'm putting the blame off on the elders." And I said, "I'm gonna preach it, but I said if you don't get up and behind me, it won't be said. I preached it. What do you think happened?" They didn't get up. No. They sat right there in the pew. They didn't get up and say a word. And I'm not here whining and crying. I'm just saying, that would have been a perfect time for an eldership to have said, "David preached that by our authority because we told him to preach that." And so publicly, from time to time, both sides need the endorsement of the other. I mean, I think that helps that relationship. So we'll talk about two other things here, and it'll all come into play. Number four. Preachers want elders to understand that it is the elders who are to take responsibility in handling the impenitent members or the erring members in that congregation. Too often the preacher is the one that takes the lead in that. He goes to that person or those people and he tries to study with them about what their problem is. Too often, he has to come and report everything that's going on to the elders. And I say that not to say that he ought to be on an island by himself, but elders need to be aware of some of that on their own. Okay? I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just saying it's the elders who have the rule over the congregation. It's the elders also who need to make a special effort to be observant as to who's at services and who's not at services. And the elders need to know the brethren in that congregation. They may not know him as well as the preacher does, simply for this. Most, if preachers are fully supported in their work, they have all day to visit, and they have all day to converse with members. And a lot of elders still have 40-hour, 50-hour, 60-hour a week jobs. And so a preacher needs to understand that elder doesn't have the same opportunity he has. So he needs to use his opportunities like the elder needs to use his. But an eldership still needs to make a conscious effort to know their members. You know what 1 Thessalonians 5:12 says? I know you do. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you. That's Paul writing to the church in Thessalonica. And he says to them, the brethren need to know and respect elders who are over them, but they're not only over them, they're among them. So if you flip that around on the other side, elders ought to know who they're among. It ought not be the case that when somebody's been a member there for, you know, years and years, and then you get in an elders meeting and the preacher is there and he asks you, is so-and-so been baptized? And the elders say, you know, I'm really not sure about that. This happened. That's happened in Louisiana. It happens everywhere. Are they members? Well, you know, seems like I remember he was baptized once before. Or somebody places membership and the elders are not even observant enough to know who that person was, nor they go to them and talk to them, nor they go to them at home and visit with them. And then you say something several months later about them and they'll say, who are you talking about? I'm talking about the little fellow that sits over here. I don't think I've met him. Well, you know, the elders are the ones who are supposed to take the lead in that situation. And so we as preachers need to remember that a lot of elders still work for, you know, they work those jobs. A preacher can't have this thing both ways. He can't be allowed to have the freedom to go and come as he wants to go and come, and then cast accusations at the elders because they don't know the brethren. The preacher needs to know the brethren too. He needs to know the brethren too. He needs to know what's going on. And maybe he knows something that somebody calls him in confidence and talks to him about something or comes to see him. And we get that idea from the denominations, right? That the preacher is the pastor. We wouldn't preach that, but it's practiced a lot by brethren. If somebody goes to the hospital, who gets the call? I mean, 90% of the time, I'm just being honest, the preacher gets the call. And if he's not able to come, well, he's kind of like scum. You know, they don't call the elders most of the time. They call the preacher. Well, preachers can't be of such mind to say, I want to be able to go and come as I want to, but it's up to the elders to do all this work. It has to be a joint participation in this thing. Sometimes I'm called by one of our elders, and he'll say, hey, can you go see so-and-so there? I got a call, so-and-so, and I'm not able to go right now. Well, I'm not going to say, no, that's your job. Well, sure, I'm going to go. I'm a Christian. I'm going to do that. But at the same time, if I call him and I say, I'm not in a position to go, can you go? He shouldn't say, well, that's your job. You're the preacher. So, yeah, it's a two-way street. And if we work together on that, then we can accomplish way more for the Lord than if we fight about that or say that's, you know, try to be, that's your job, not my job. Let's see. I had another point under there. But we'll move on. This is the last one. At this point.
See you looking at me. You
said in the introduction that I shared a motel room with you for a week, so I'm I know you, and I love you. Old Cliff gets up early in the mornings. Early in the mornings.
Water's hot.
He asked me, what time are you getting up in the morning? I said, I don't know, about 6:20, 6:30. At 10 after, he comes in and throws all the curtains open and says, hey, it's 10 after 6, it's time to get up. So that night I said, by the way, I have an alarm clock. I said, I'll be able to get up on my own in the morning. But we had a great time. Preachers want the elders to understand that it is the elders' role and responsibility to feed the flock. 1 Peter 5, verse 1 beginning says, so I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that's going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that's among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. It is the elders who have the responsibility of having the vision for a congregation and for taking the time to look around at all the congregation and the flock and see what needs to be fed. Not just making sure what's fed is sound. That has to be. That's a given here. We're not talking about unsound doctrine. We're talking about what God says correctly. But we as preachers sit and you sit and you think and you scan the congregation in your mind and you wonder, what's the next thing that needs to be fed? What's the best thing for this situation? How can I help these brethren? That goes with preaching, but it surely needs to be done in cooperation with and parallel to what the elders think as well. Now, I have to brag again on these guys here. I was here not this year, but last year, when they gave the report to the congregation and the various areas in which they were going to work in the next year as far as teaching goes, each one of these men came up and went over that and then had a prayer. And they had sat down and they had worked up that oversight or that vision for that whole year. And then they presented to the congregation. That was outstanding. All elderships don't do that, ours included. That's a great example. We need to do more of that. We need to be taking that flock somewhere. We don't just need to be abiding with them. There are brethren who sit in the pews and they never grow, sometimes because it's their fault. They don't want to grow. And sometimes it's because they're not challenged by the eldership to grow. They're not challenged by the preacher to grow. Preacher gets up, some preachers get up and they have two sermons and a Bible class ready for Sunday. They've done their job, they think. That's what they're supposed to do. And we need to be going somewhere. If you go back into the Old Testament and think about the Old Testament Palestine shepherds, they would go ahead of the flock. When the flock was feeding here or when the flock was resting, that shepherd would be out looking for the next day's food or the next day's food. That shepherd would be out looking for any animals, any holes, any places where that flock might get harmed if they went that way. And then they would come back and they would lead that flock in the paths that was safe and where there was good food. Not just food, but good food. God had something to say in the Old Testament to the elders or the shepherds of Israel, not elders as far as the elders in the church, but the leaders of the Jews. In Exodus chapter 34, and so I'm coming to you this morning, this afternoon, as a preacher and as an elder, so this applies to me on both my feet. So there's no way me to get, I mean, I'm not trying to get, I'm just saying this, I take this into consideration as I work at Homer. The word of the Lord came to me, said, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, even to the shepherds, thus saith the Lord God. Ah, shepherds of Israel who have been feeding yourselves, should not the shepherds feed the flock, the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. The weak you have not strengthened, the sick you have not healed, the injured you have not bound up, the strayed you have not brought back, the lost you have not sought, and with force and harshness you have ruled them. So they were scattered, because there was no shepherd. And they became food for all the wild beasts. My sheep were scattered. They wandered all over the mountains and on every high hill. My sheep were scattered all over the face of the earth, with none to search or seek for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. He says, as I live, declares the Lord, surely because my sheep have become a prey, and my sheep have become food for all the wild beasts, since there was no shepherd, and because my shepherds have not searched for my sheep, but my shepherds fed themselves and not fed my sheep, therefore you shepherds hear the word. Thus saith the Lord God, behold, I'm against the shepherds, and I will require my sheep at their hand, and put a stop to the feeding of the flock. No longer shall the shepherds feed themselves. I will rescue my sheep from their mouths, that they may not be food for them. That was written or prophesied against the leaders of Israel, who worried more about themselves than they did about the flock. They didn't go ahead of the flock, as it were, and feed them what the flock needed to be fed. They fed them, they took care of themselves. And so all I'm saying is we as elders, our job is to feed that flock. Now the preacher, we hire preachers to do that publicly, and that's quite all right. Paul was a, I mean, you got all examples in the Old Testament, New Testament you ever wanted about located preachers and preachers doing that. But a preacher worth his salt, that's why I wish there were more preachers in here. Preachers that's worth his salt will seek guidance from his elders as to what needs to be preached. There was a long time ago, there was a preacher in Mississippi who went to a congregation, and even in his quote tryout sermon, he got up and named almost every denominational name that there was. Okay? He moved there, and that's about all he ever preached on, was false teaching and calling out denominations. Well, you know, there's a time and place for some of that. But the elders called him in and said, that's not what we need right now. This congregation's hurting. We need you to preach some lessons that will challenge us to heal and to grow and to move forward and work together. And he told them, I don't work for you. I work for the Lord. Now, these old boys were country boys. And so the next thing they said to him was, next Sunday, ask the Lord for your check, son, because this is the last one you're going to get. And he went out talking about the elders, how bad they were. Well, see, that's not working together. Yeah, there comes a time. Paul called names. There comes a time when you have to warn brethren. We're told in the book of Thessalonians to warn the unruly. We're told to withdraw fellowship from brethren. We're told to do these things, and we must do those things. But an elder, I mean, a preacher needs to work with an eldership doing that. And if the elders come to me and say, David, and they do from time to time, we need some lessons. What would you think about preaching on this? I said, man, I wish y'all would tell me a lot more stuff I need to do as far as preaching goes, because you know the culture and the people somewhat better than I do. And so tell me what I need to preach, and I'll preach it. I'm not patting myself. I'm just saying that's the way it ought to work. But some preachers, you know, they don't want elders to tell them what to do. And some elders think that that's the preacher's job, and they don't want to be bothered with it. And either one of those conditions is wrong. Yeah, those aren't good situations to work under those situations. There needs to be that partnership. They need to talk on a regular basis, and they need to have the same vision for the church. I'm going to read you the last thing I wrote here. Elders do not need to leave it up to the preacher. And preachers do not need to take it personally when elders inject ideas and subjects they feel need to be preached. That needs to be a partnership. Authority belongs to the elders. But there needs to be a partnership between the preacher and the elders. You're working in a capacity, we're working in a capacity to take a congregation from point A to point B. That's our job. That's our God-given roles. Now, elders are going to be held responsible for the way they did that. And preachers are going to be judged by how they preached and what attitude they preached with and those kind of things. So we're both going to be judged very, very strictly on these matters. So we might as well, we need to work together so that we can accomplish the most that we can for the Lord. Our work is to teach the gospel to the world. It needs to be done with elders and preachers working hand in hand. It should never be a competition between them, but a work in which both fulfill their God-given roles. Elders need to understand preachers, and preachers need to understand elders, and they both should hide in the shadow of the cross and give God the glory for what they accomplish. And if we can do those things together, then God will be glorified, our souls will be saved, and we'll save a lot of people in the process. And we'll help a lot of people heal, like in Exodus 34. They didn't help. God used language of a sheep that was out here beaten up or tattered and torn, and the shepherd didn't go out and bind the wounds up and all that. Well, sometimes brethren come to us, they're wounded. Sometimes elders come to elders and they're wounded. Sometimes preachers come to elders and they're wounded. And we should be about the binding of it up. And we should be about the helping that person get healed up spiritually so that person can reach his potential for the Lord and the church can move forward and God can be glorified as we go. So those are the five things that I landed on to say. I tried to cover as much of an area. But, yes, sir.
David, I've got a question for you. We're in the process now. We lost an elder's wife, and we only have two elders, so that leaves us without elders. And we're in the process of selecting elders. My question to you, with your wisdom, and I appreciate this class. This has been very beneficial to us. Preston and I are both deacons there. And the question has come about our preacher becoming an elder. Can you give us any insight as to any problems that created, or is that working great? The way it sounds, it seems like it's working great.
It works. It works fine. As long as the preacher remembers that he's still under that eldership as a preacher, and so you have to work out those the attitudes are to be taken into consideration. It would be taken into consideration, like it creates some situations like pay, things of that nature. I let Randy and Herb handle that. I don't get involved. I don't handle the money at all, any shape, form, or fashion of the handling of the money. That's their job. They do that. They write the checks. They handle the money. I stay out of that. That's one thing it would cause. A preacher wouldn't have to do anything wrong. Just somebody would have to start a rumor about it, and he'd be ruined in that congregation. So that would have to be protected right there. However, if a fellow has been there a while, like I've been there, it's like I plan on being there until I die, then we talk about what needs to be done. We talk about the brethren as far as how to help them. We don't just gossip about it. We try to help. So a preacher is in there, and he's looked to a lot of times as the leader. So if all the fellows involved can work together in that, and the congregation can accept that, they had an elder, a preacher who was an elder before me years ago. It was about 8 or 9 years, or maybe 10. And when this came up, I heard one man say, I don't know if it's going to work again. And there was one fellow in there I was particularly concerned about. He came to me personally, and he said, that's the best thing I've ever heard around here. He said,
you got some that are saying that now. And that's the reason I asked that question. And I appreciate your wisdom on that.
Well, it works well for us because Kathy and I had endeared ourselves to the congregation. They knew we loved them. That's a great congregation. I meant to say, it's only one congregation in town, so it doesn't matter where you come from or who you are. Everybody goes to the same congregation. We get along great. We went in and tried to make ourselves as much Cajun as we could to get along with them. They knew that. They knew we loved them. They know we love them. And so, you know, Kathy doesn't want to lose her Mississippi accent. I'm trying to pick up the Cajun accent, but I can't seem to lose my Mississippi. But really, you know, it depends on the attitude of the leader, of the elders and the preacher together. They can work together. If a preacher can keep himself humble enough that he doesn't have to think that he now is really the boss because he's an elder and a preacher. I mean, you know, he still has to remain under the eldership, and that other elder comes to him. I don't know if it would be a good situation if it were just two elders and one of them was a preacher. I think it'd be better. I think it'd be better if there were two other elders and a preacher, and then on because then you got two and one as far as the pay and some things. You know, the congregation can look at it and say, "Well, David's not running the show because here we have two other elders in there with him." I think that's a good perspective. It probably could work the other way, but it would be a lot more tension, I think, that way. But it can work. I promise you, works wonderfully down at home.
Hey, Brother David. You know, 1 Timothy 5, that was very common in the first century because it's addressed in 1 Timothy 5 about an elder who labors in word and in doctrine.
Yes, sir.
Which is a gospel preacher who's also serving as an elder.
Yes, sir.
Peter is a great example.
He was an apostle and an elder, right. 1 Peter 5, yes.
And a preacher.
And a preacher, yes, sir. So it was common in the first century. And it's not unscriptural, but again, Paul said all things are lawful, but all things aren't expedient. So in some cases, it might not be expedient, but brethren with the right attitude and who love the Lord and want to see the church flourish and go forth, that can work very well. Thank you for your attention. Yes, sir.
I'm not an elder anymore, but when I was one, when we would ask the preacher to preach on something that was touching, we would get up, when an elder would get up before the preacher and would announce to the congregation, ask the preacher following the subject, and then when he finished, then another elder would come up and thank him for doing it.
I see.
But the congregation knew right
away. That's the way. Yeah.
But there was different times, whether it was discipline or whatever. Like, we didn't want them to think this is the preacher.
Boys, I appreciate that. Along that line, we had. I told you one of our elders' wives died. Why is that? He wanted to continue to serve. He thought he could continue to serve as an elder without a wife. And so we let him have his days of mourning, and then we went to him, and they did, and they wanted me to go with him. They said, look, you're going to have to step down. And he said, I'm not stepping down. Now, you can get up and say that I'm no longer an elder. And we had one of our elders preceded me get up and go through the scenario before I ever preached. And when I got up, I said, I really don't have any need to preach this sermon because Randy's already, and that's the best I ever heard that man do, but he got up before me and said, we asked David to preach on this, here's why, and he gave the reasons, and I thought, when I got up, I said, I really just need to offer the invitation because Randy's already preached a sermon, but I went basically the same arguments he went through, so I appreciate you for that, and that's the way it's supposed to be done. That's a great way to do it anyway. Thank you guys very much, and ladies, and hope you have a great afternoon.